Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 108. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And today we are finally talking about Chalice of the Gods chapters 12 through 14.
It only took an extra week and a half. Like, it's fine. It's totally fine.
Yeah. It is completely and totally fine because we also have a full-length trailer to talk about today.
Yes, we do.
And that's
and we can talk about it, which has not worn off yet.
As I was reading the welcome message, it was like, books, adaptations, and more. And I was like, oh, we can finally talk about the adaptations again. I still feel naughty, like, tweeting things out.
Yeah.
And stuff like, oh, wait, I can do this, right? It's okay.
Still feels a little bit forbidden.
Yeah, it does. But we'll get used to it. It's been a lot of fun seeing the fandom come back alive after the strikes were over and everybody talking about it again and footage being shared and all that kind of stuff. It's just, this is what the Percy Jackson fandom can be, and I think it's going to get even bigger. I've been telling everybody to watch this show. Who messaged me? My cousin messaged me, and he's like, did I just watch a trailer for Percy Jackson? And I was like, you better watch it. And he's like, yeah, I'll check it out. And then I had somebody else say that they would watch it on the... my mom, probably, I told to watch it, because she's read the books. She's a fan.
Nice.
And I want to say, like, wasn't Danielle, it was somebody else kind of random who messaged me and was like, yeah, I'll totally watch it on opening day. And I was like, oh, thanks.
I was gonna say, it was just your birthday. Was it another hyperbole, or was it like Brandy or Brittany?
I don't think
it
was Brandy. I haven't heard from Brittany. I don't know, but I feel like that's closer to what it was. But yeah.
Some figment from your past.
Yes.
Has been told, watch it.
Yes.
Watch it or else.
Yes. No.
I'm basically going to be singing its praises all over Thanksgiving and trying to convince my whole family that it's something they need to be watching.
Do you think that's something that your niece would like?
I mean, maybe.
She's a little bit older, but I feel like...
Yeah, like she's a teenager now.
Yeah.
Complete with teenage emotions.
But I mean...
And like, she's big into like Outer Banks.
Okay.
All of those shows.
Really?
It's there. Outer Banks is like in with the teens. It's like our teen shows of the past.
Okay.
Like OC and all of that when we were younger. Outer Banks is very much that show. Like they wear the stupid little pop tab on a thing around their neck because it's like a thing they do on the show. Like that sort of thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
or at least it was. I don't know. It's been a while since they had a new season, so I know it's been a little less, you know.
Yeah.
But at one point, she was, like, very into Outer Banks.
Okay. Not to, like, derail this conversation too much, but after our discussion of what middle age was and all of that, and then seeing all this millennial nostalgia, like the Mean Girls Walmart commercial, and now the Home Alone Google commercial, did you see that? Macaulay Culkin comes back and does Home Alone 30 years later.
No,
it is a fantastic commercial and was really, really funny. But, like, between those two things, I'm like, I feel so old.
Yeah.
Like, these ads are for us.
Yeah.
They're no longer for the kids. They're for the almost middle-aged people.
Yeah, it's a little...
We're feeling old. But, hey, that's our niche. That's why we decided to do this podcast.
Right.
We are the two old ladies who started a podcast about Percy Jackson.
And other middle grade books.
Yeah.
But I will say something very, it's kind of related, not entirely. So have you looked at the Goodreads Awards at all yet?
I saw the news, and actually, good thing bringing that up, because we probably should talk about that.
Just briefly.
Yeah.
So Goodreads put up their Goodreads Choice Awards like they do every year, and this year, there is no middle grade award.
Yeah.
Just gone.
That's
they just eliminated it.
Wild to
they
me.
Added romanticy, which honestly I think is a good category to add, because fantasy people have been pissed about Sarah J. Maas, like, taking over the category and things in the past. So, like, I feel like it isn't a bad thing to have a romanticy category, but I don't understand why eliminating middle grade and, like, there were, like, two other awards.
Poetry and graphic novels.
Yep. Why they think eliminating those three was necessary. It's a digital award. Yeah. There's no statue. It's not like they're buying awards and sending them to people. Like, I'm pretty sure that's not a thing. It's just a Goodreads award. So, like, why are we eliminating
it? And especially for, like, the children's category blows my mind. Because that is, I mean, that's across all different genres. Yep. That is a whole group of people, of kids who, you know, they're just gone out of this award now. But the graphic novels and the poetry, especially, because those are something that not everybody reads. Yeah. And I can imagine that getting a Goodreads award, being able to put that on your book, is huge. Like, it gives you some, like, acclaim.
Yeah. And, like, graphic novels are not unpopular. Like, not everyone reads them. But for the people who really enjoy them, there's a reason why the Harry Potters, the Percy Jacksons, all get adapted to graphic novels at some point. It's because it's a fun way to take in the story and a new art form, and it's fun. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't understand why they did it either. I did look through the old awards that they had listed, and I did dawn on me, maybe they just got tired of giving it to Rick Riordan. Until last year, he was the only person in history to have won it. Like, 2011 through, like, 2022, it was all Rick. Year after year after year after year, he won the award. And I was like, maybe they just looked at the history and said, as long as he's writing, he's gonna win, because he's won every year. But, like, I don't think that's fair either.
I don't think that's fair. And I remember, I think this was in a blog post or something, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember him specifically saying he didn't want to be nominated anymore.
I thought that was last year. That he had said, like, I appreciate you guys and your love for my books, and I just want other people. And I think it was because of RRP. Like, he's seeing all these great middle grade stories, and he doesn't want to keep getting this award because people think they have to vote for him. Like, he's like, if I take myself out of the running, then all of these great stories that I love and helped nurture, you know, have a chance at winning something like that. That, again, isn't a huge award, but is, like, people understand what a Goodreads award is. They know what it means. Yeah. They know it means that readers love your book and that they voted for it and, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah.
And for as well as the Rick Riordan Presents books are doing, not everybody knows about them.
Right.
And this could go a long way with getting people interested in reading them. It's just, it's really frustrating, and I'm very curious if they're going to walk this back either this year or next year.
I'm wondering if this wasn't a test this year to kind of see what, like, if they eliminated categories or added categories or whatever. I'm curious if this was just like a, we're gonna see if we change things up, how it goes over. Maybe they're planning on doing a middle grade and children's version of the awards, and they actually separate them out, because putting all of middle grade books in one category also feels a little short-sighted. Like, there's middle grade fantasy, middle grade sci-fi, middle grade romance. Like, there are enough books in each category for them to each have their own, and you'd still have five or six entrants to pick between every year.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe they're planning on doing a younger version of the Goodreads choice and not just doing, like, these are mostly adult books now.
Yeah.
So, like, I could see them maybe
that
splitting
would
it
be
up.
Cool.
But I don't know. This is all just speculation on my part, and hopefully they'll rectify it and make it right, because it does just seem dumb. Not, why are we just choosing not to award these authors anymore? Like, no, we're not letting them, no.
Yeah.
That seems ridiculous. So, hopefully they'll fix that. I know there's a petition going around.
Oh, good.
People really are trying to get them reinstated and all of that. So, I don't know if that's, like, I don't know how many signatures are on it or anything, but I did see, like, talk of a petition the other day. So,
good.
Keep an eye out for that. I'm sure you'll, if you Google Goodreads petition, middle grade, whatever, I'm sure it would pop up.
Yeah.
Because, yeah,
more than
it's
likely
on the tip of people's tongues right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because I completely forgot to put that in the news. But if you'd like to contact us to talk to us about what's going on with Goodreads, about the trailer that just came out, about Chalice of the Gods, or really anything about getting older, then you can do so at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, Threads, and Facebook, and prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com.
I didn't realize we hadn't finished the intro.
Like, oh, yeah.
My brain was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
We got chatty.
Yeah, we got a little carried away, but that's okay. Yeah. I like getting a little chatty at the top of the episode, talking about some things outside of our purview.
Agreed.
But we are going to talk about news and updates this week, and pretty much everything centers around the television show right now. I didn't catch any book news outside of this. But that's okay. There will be some more coming up soon.
And if we missed anything, feel free to shoot us a link or whatever. We love hearing from you guys. So yeah.
And there's a lot of authors to keep up with. So yeah. Sometimes I miss them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. But I wanted to read out what Timothy Omundson put on Instagram about his role as Hephaestus in Percy Jackson and the Olympians, because I thought it was really beautiful. He says, I posted about this role the other day, but have more to say. I was honored and proud when Rick Riordan and Dan Schatz invited me to be a part of their incredible creation, Percy series. Not just because it would mean joining a dream list of guest stars like legends Lin-Manuel Miranda, Adam Copeland, Megan Mullally, and the late, great Lance Reddick, just to name a few, but also because Hephaestus, like myself, and 1 in 4 Americans are disabled. Note my cane hanging off my coveralls in the lower left corner of this photo. The incredible props department built it to the same specifications as the one I use in real life, although mine, sadly, is not made of gold. There was never any question of whether I should try and hide my disabilities, which I can't do anyway. They are part of who I am, and I'm beyond grateful to Rick, Dan, and John Steinberg for giving me the opportunity to play this strong, dignified, and thriving character, as many in my community actually are, but you rarely get to see on your screens. Hashtag representation matters, hashtag performers with disabilities. This show was made with so much love and is going to knock your socks off.
I've got socks on. Knock them off there, guys.
I just love this message in general about the representation of people with disabilities, the fact that they never wanted him to be anything other than who he was. They cast him because of that. And you'll see throughout, I've actually got something else to talk about in this trailer related to this. And it's just really wonderful. And I love how outspoken he is about what he's gone through and, you know, getting back to acting and not having to hide any of those things. It's really wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I was a decent fan of his. I hadn't seen everything he ever did, but like prior to his stroke, I believe it was, I watched him on Psych and other things, and I really enjoy him as an actor. Like, I think he's great. And I'm just so glad that there, you know, he's finding roles that really do allow him to represent himself in his best glory, because he is really, really terrific. And so, yeah, I'm ecstatic that he's playing Hephaestus. I love his look in the screenshot that we got with the post. Like, it's not necessarily how I pictured Hephaestus, but I love it.
Yeah.
Like, it's honestly better than my mind came up with, because it just feels right. It just feels like it works. So, yeah, super excited about that.
Yeah, I'm really glad we're going to be seeing more of him in this season, and can't wait to see kind of what happens, you know, going forward with that. And now that the strikes are over, a lot of the actors, both the older and the younger ones, have been talking a lot about the show and have been, you know, kind of giving their thoughts on being happy and being a part of it and posting the trailer and all that kind of stuff. So that's super exciting. I wanted to finally confirm, and I know this will shock everybody who's been in the fandom for any amount of time, that Andrew Alvarez has officially confirmed that he is playing Chris Rodriguez. We've pretty much known this from the beginning, but he wasn't confirming it officially, and nobody else did either. So now that that's happening.
Yeah, and then the strike hit, so it's been like months since we first addressed that, which is funny.
Yeah, so that is officially official at this point. I know everybody's probably shocked, but I really wanted to let everybody know about that.
Love it.
And we also got notice that the review embargo for what I assume is the first 2 episodes lists on December 14th. So December 14th is going to be the day that you're either going to want to stay off the internet if you want to know nothing, or scour the internet for all of the spoiler-free reviews that will be going up. These will be people's first takes at the episode and
largely be journalists and people who've been in the fandom, like notable fans and things like that, who will get access to the screeners.
Yeah. So that's going to be really exciting, and we'll see, you know, what everybody thinks.
They probably won't have too many, like, major spoilers in their things.
Yeah.
I just want to say this so that those that are worried, they probably won't have a lot of spoilers, because Karen and I have some experience with screeners, and usually there's a whole list of things that you're not allowed to directly talk about in your review, but it will give a general overview of what they think. If there's some details they want to include that aren't on that list, they may be included, but they're not going to, like, spoil, I mean, we already know what happens,
right.
We're huge fans, but, like, they're not going to spoil details or things in those posts. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for a general idea, or you just can't get enough and you're, you know, I wouldn't worry about having the series ruined for you or anything.
Yeah.
But they will talk about it. They will give some details.
I would imagine most people are going to talk about the vibe of the show, kind of what the show feels like. They'll talk about the different actors, who really stands out on screen, who kind of shines brighter than the others. And maybe possibly, like, CGI, like, how the monsters are portrayed and stuff like that. So it'll all be very, like, non-spoilery kind of stuff. Not necessarily plot, but more just, like, what to expect or how well they actually adapted the show for the screen.
Yeah.
Before we actually get into discussing the trailer, I have a tweet from Liam who said, "The Percy Jackson official trailer has eclipsed 2.2 million views in 24 hours. It is the highest viewed video on the Disney Plus YouTube channel in over 1 month. As of today, the four trailers have a combined 17.5 million views."
And about 400 of them are probably me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because I've watched that, especially the teaser trailer, I've watched that a lot, like, trying to get the details. Like, I probably watched it 100 times all on my own. Like, just the other day. So that's hilarious. But yeah, it's crazy. And I just hope this is foretelling great things and tons of viewers, and that families really just love the show, and
I think it's only going to get bigger from here, which is both a good thing and a bad thing, because at some point, fandoms get so big that they get even more out of control than when they're small.
It's true.
So we'll have to be, you know, aware of that, but I'm really excited for the rest of the world to understand why we love this story so much.
Right.
Yeah.
So, so very much.
So we did officially get the full-length trailer on November 16th, which was very awesome. And, yeah, it kind of confirmed our guesses that we'd see some more of the monsters in the trailer and all of that. So I'm going to be breaking down the trailer, not necessarily shot by shot. I'm only going to be talking about the new footage that we got, because there is some repeat stuff, but there was a lot of new stuff in there, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we open up on little tiny baby Percy and his mom, and they're looking up at the statue at the Met that we see Percy studying later, and he goes, "Perseus, that's me." And Sally goes, "Mm-hmm, that's who you're named after." And Percy says, "Because he was a hero?" And Sally says, "Because he was brave and kind, and against all odds, he managed to find his way to a happy ending."
So we just confirmed she's a romance reader, and I love that for us. I mean, I already knew I loved Sally Jackson, but I like that she prioritized finding someone to name her child after who included a happy ending. Like, that's important to her. If she's saying it to him right here, right then, I love that that's that added detail of, like, hopefully naming you after this person will give you that same luck, will help you find your happy ending, too.
And I'm just, you know, I didn't really have a lot of feelings about Virginia Call when she was cast. I didn't dislike her or anything, but I just wasn't familiar with her. And every time we see her on screen, I fall more and more in love with her as Sally. Just her tone of voice, her warmth, how close she is to Percy. I really love that. And Asriel Dahlman as young Percy looks even more like Walker in this trailer.
Than we thought. Yeah.
Yeah. They, like, curled his hair a little bit, and it's like mini Walker.
Boom.
Like, they look so much alike.
It's freaky.
It's astounding.
I also love that her hair is a little lighter. Not that we care about hair color, but, like, I love that her and Percy feel naturally like their mother and son. Like, they just, it, the vibe is there. It totally works.
Yeah. Seaweed Brain Podcast says that at New York Comic Con, they learned that Percy's relationship with Sally is going to be expanded, and there will be a lot of new dialogue between them, which I really love. I think that's really exciting.
This is just me thanking Mark once again, because I have a feeling that writing Sun and the Star and Rick really diving into character in a different way than he's done before has probably helped and added to all of this. Mm-hmm. So we love you, Mark. We love you so very much, because now we get all the new character relationship details and mm-hmm. scenes, and it's only going to make this series better and better.
Yeah, and if you think about it, what happens to Sally is going to hit so much harder after you realize how close they are. I mean, we know in the books how close they are and everything like that, but like, just getting to see more of that on screen, I think the visual effect of it is really going to...
Well, like, even just the vibes from the trailers so far, with, like, Grover coming to the house and her, like, talking to Grover and all that, it just feels like she's more a part of it than we ever, like, I mean, it's so short in the book how much time we get with Sally in book one. Like, we spend so much time with the trio and not very much with her. And so, I can already kind of feel the vibes building and, mm-hmm. very much looking forward to all
this. We get a lot of really quick flashes while she says this dialogue here. We get the trio walking through some dark woods, and I've seen some people say that this is possibly the underworld.
Could be.
Which is really interesting to me, and we'll come back to that a little bit later. Percy pulling blue candy out of his backpack that his mom obviously packed for him. Oh my gosh. Grover being pulled by the winged shoes into Tartarus. I missed this the first time.
I don't think I've seen this.
Yeah, it's a really quick flash. He looks like he's in, like, sand, like a sandy area, and he's being pulled backwards, and everyone is like, he's getting pulled to Tartarus. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's true. So that really good catch for people who saw that right away. We see the under part of the St. Louis Arch that has been blown open. And this is obviously where he's going to, like, fall through to the river. And then we see Percy running through trees, probably during the capture the flag scene. And then Percy having fallen into the river after the arch. And then we see a shot of him during the Minotaur scene. So that's a lot of, like, really fast things that's new footage for us that if you don't pause, like...
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and look for the Grover thing because I've watched this a couple of times. I definitely missed that every
time. It was very fast.
I'm going to go look for that in a little bit.
So then the title kind of comes in and then we get the actual trailer, which feels a little bit more like a story is being told. We see Nancy throwing cheese at Grover outside the Met while they eat lunch. And I know that we're supposed to hate her, but I think she's going to do such a good job that it's going to be hard to, like... I think that actress is really talented and I like her look and everything. So I'm really excited to see how she plays this up.
Well, and with how excited she was to be playing Nancy Boba Fett, like, we're all kind of, like, fans. So it's fun. Yeah. It's really cute.
And then we get a shot of Percy looking wide-eyed at something, and I feel like he's looking at Electo, but in the next shot, we get a shot of Blackjack. And the only reason why I don't think that it's Blackjack is because, according to what we discussed last week, Blackjack is seen in the first opening 7 minutes when he's young. So Blackjack was kind of maybe, like, watching over him or was just around. And so I feel like this scene could have been, like, edited.
Okay, I totally did not put it together. Like, I knew we had talked about Blackjack, and I wondered if it was supposed to be when he was younger, because I thought we had, discussed that. But I was like, you know, it's a trailer, like, who knows? Honestly, I think it probably makes more sense if Blackjack was around when he was younger. Like, if somebody used Blackjack to get to New York to help Percy, and that, like, whether it's Grover or whomever.
Also, kids can see through the mist easier.
Yeah.
So he might be seeing things as a small child, but now that he's a little bit older, the mist is kind of taking over more.
Yeah. So, like, that all makes sense. And yeah, I mean, with trailers, they cut things.
Right.
You never know. You never know if a reaction shot is truly there until you watch the show.
So. Yeah, exactly. Chiron then says, Percy, you are special. When you're ready to hear what the gods have in store for you, they'll tell you. And this is at the museum, probably Chiron making him feel better that he has trouble with his assignment and stuff like that. And we also get the shot of him handing over Riptide. This is probably the scene that they saw at New York Comic Con.
Sounds about right, yeah.
I looked very closely at Riptide. It looks like a pretty normal pen. It has, like, a gold clip on it, which I thought was interesting. And I didn't know, like, if that could have been in the shape of something. Like, it wouldn't make sense for it to be in the shape of a lightning bolt, but, like, you know, I don't know. I feel like they could really add more detail.
Like a trident.
Yeah, something like that. But, like, we couldn't see it that well, and I don't know if they'll have added a detail that small. I mean, it's very possible that's sort of what they do, but... Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just obsessed about Riptide right now.
Yeah, it'll be okay.
We also get a shot of the back of Medusa's head, as well as Cerberus. So I want to go back to the blurry pictures that we saw last week, because you were like, I see an eye. And I was like, I don't see an eye. And then I looked at it on a different, I think on my big screen instead of on my phone, totally saw an eye.
Yeah.
I totally saw
like
what you were getting
at. Like when it's dark, you kind of see like a helmet and like an eye.
Well, I don't think it was a helmet, but I think it was the eye of a snake.
Which is totally possible.
Yeah, somebody on Twitter was like, I think it's Medusa. And I was like, oh my gosh, I think it is one of her snakes, like a close-up shot of it. And then I was like, I totally see the eye now. I have to make sure I tell Kristen she was right.
You're not crazy. There very well might have been an eye there.
Yeah. And then the Cerberus shot, Percy is kind of standing on the edge of a cliff holding the red ball, and Cerberus kind of jumps up for it and snaps his jaws, one side of his jaws, very close to Percy's face.
Again, just applause for Karen for knowing that was Cerberus, because all I could see were teeth. I didn't see the red ball at all, but in the trailer it's clear that is definitely Cerberus.
Yeah, I was really proud of catching that. Yeah, and I think Cerberus looks great. He's a three-headed Rottweiler, which is how I always kind of picture Cerberus. So yeah. I'm glad they kind of went with that. And I just want to see him be such a good boy.
I know. It's going to be adorable.
Yeah,
I'm really excited. At the same time.
Next, we get Percy saying, "This is crazy." And Sally says, "You are a half-blood, and half-bloods are not safe in the world." We get a shot of Percy getting pushed down by Clarice while Chris Rodriguez and Luke stand by along with a lot of other campers. And you can see Luke's scar pretty well in this shot. It's quite long. It goes down the majority of his cheek, but it's not like super pronounced, but it's definitely there. I saw some people discussing whether or not they would have liked like a bigger scar, one that like marred his face more, but I like the look of it, and so far I'm really kind of liking the vibe that Luke is giving off.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah, right. It's gonna, for the people who don't know, it's gonna be good. Yeah.
It's gonna be so good.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I can't wait for all these newbies.
I know.
It's gonna be fantastic.
We gotta find the people who came in without reading the book so we can see their genuine reactions.
Right?
Yeah.
Maybe
we'll get some friends on the podcast.
I was gonna say, like, even, I don't think the boyfriend has read those. Like,
okay.
I don't think he's not a huge reader. So I'm like, And I've already basically said, like, we're watching this.
Yeah.
You're watching it with me, and it's a thing. So, yeah, that's going to be fun.
Yeah. We've got some friends who haven't read the books either, so, yeah, I think that'll definitely be a cool thing. Grover then says, everything's been training for what's still ahead of you. He's in the back of the car at this point, and it definitely looks like the Minotaur came down from the sky, and there are sparks like it could be lightning. It wasn't like a huge lightning strike, but he's definitely coming down from the sky. So,
yeah.
You know, pretty sure Zeus is the one who...
Pretty
sent
much.
Him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we do get a shot of the Minotaur from the front later on, but at this point it's just his butt. But, like, he's very scary looking.
Yes.
And he runs on all four legs.
I was going to say, which was a bit of a thing my brain had to, like, process. Like, oh, yeah, that is the Minotaur. He runs on four legs. Like, huh. Like, I've always just kind of pictured them walking around on two legs.
Yeah.
Like, basically being human, but, like, with a... Yeah. So, yeah, it's a whole experience.
Yeah, I think it's gonna end up being pretty scary.
Oh yeah, agreed.
Then Chiron says, Percy Jackson, your father needs your help. The master bolt has been stolen. If you don't return the bolt, there will be war. That is your quest. We We get a shot of Poseidon in the throne room in his very wrinkly shirt. I don't know why this keeps making me laugh. I still find it so funny. But, like, that was a choice. That was a choice that they made.
Ironing not necessary. Yes. When you're a god of the sea, you just did.
You always look a little rumpled.
Right?
Wind rumpled. The other thrones are definitely stone, but they do look different from each other. Zeus's is the bigger one, of course, because, you know,
he's Zeus.
Yeah. I also went back to the older teaser, and you might have seen me tweet this out earlier this morning. Well, we're recording this on Friday. You're not going to get it till Monday, so.
So you may have seen it on Friday.
Yeah. But I went to the older teaser trailer, and the back of Poseidon's chair looks like waves, which is really cool. And there could also be some sort of sea creature on the front. It's hard to tell what it is. And in the description of his chair in the books, they just call them, like, sea creatures.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if it could maybe be the hippocampus, because I feel like that's really representative of Poseidon. It's a sea creature, but it's also a horse. But it was too blurry in the background to actually be able to tell. But I'll be really interested in seeing what it looks like. If we get, like, a closer up picture of it at some point.
Yeah.
And it is still stone. And this is actually in line with what's in the book. I went back to the wiki to read what it said about the description of Poseidon's throne. And it is a stone throne, which, in my head, I always pictured it as the actual deep sea fishing chair. But it is a stone throne that just looks like the deep sea fisherman's chair. So, I know, it would have been more fun if it was like, just, Zeus had this big stone throne, and then next to him, Poseidon's just chilling in like a plastic chair.
Right? Like with a metal base, and it's just like,
yeah,
there. I mean, they can do whatever they want. Again, and we kind of talked about how maybe the stone throne is like what it looks like when they're all just there. But when they're seated in their throne, it can take on whatever appearance they want it to. Like, we don't know how the show's going to handle these thrones to begin with. There's a good chance they don't change and they're all just there. But if they wanted to do something like that, they absolutely could.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see what they do.
Yeah. But it does seem to fall very close in line with what is described in the book, which is really cool. And I am super, super excited to see what the other chairs look like. If we'll even see the other chairs, because we know we're not going to get all of the other gods by the end of the season. So that'll be very interesting.
We'll probably get a blink and you miss it. Like, glance at them. Like, the camera pans by them to these two, and boom, that's all you get.
Yeah, and you can see Hera's chair on the right-hand side as well, but, again, couldn't really pick out any details. But at least we kind of know that those three are right there.
And it is definitely smaller than Zeus's, because that tracks.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I think all of them are going to be smaller than Zeus's.
That is the only requirement.
The next shot, we see the Master Bolt being placed down in front of the Empire State Building guard. This is one of the highlights of the trailer for me. That just made me so excited seeing him. A lot of people were still guessing what book he could be reading.
Yeah.
A media guy on Twitter said Daughter of the Deep, which would be really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We still have a lot of ideas for, you know, what that could end up being. But it was really cool seeing him. And then we get a shot from the Capture the Flag scene, where we see Clarice's spear, which was a little scary looking.
Yeah, a little bit.
But very cool. I'm very excited to see that in motion. Chiron then says, "I know it sounds daunting, but you won't be alone. Quest is always undertaken by three."
I have to say, I love the dramatic boom, boom shots of Annabeth and Grover after that. Like, it just feels like, and here are your three. Like, in case you didn't know, these are your big three. Like, it was, like, so trailers of old. Like, all the old, like, Hunger Games and Divergent and whatever. It just felt like those, where you get those single shots of each of the significant characters. Yeah. It's like, ta-da!
This, you know, just to take a step back for a minute. Overall, this trailer and the teaser trailers and everything have been really good, really high quality, a lot of action, some comedy, which, like, I was excited there was a little more comedy in this trailer because we know these books are so funny. But I love the tone that they're taking. It feels like a really good mix to me, and I think the trailer is capturing a vibe that I'm very interested in seeing play out on screen.
Agreed.
So we see the trio walk through that dark forest again. Again, it could be the underworld. If so, is that the Oracle? We've kind of already asked this question. Or could it be some other kind of spirit or monster? I'm not really sure. Like, I mean, I briefly thought, could this be Charon? But, like, he's supposed to be, like, skeletal, and he wouldn't be in a forest, you know?
And he's usually, like... Like, the coloring of that being is very light, and I feel like Charon is supposed to give you, like, dark.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like black clothes and whatever. Yeah. Like, I feel like, for some reason, if that was Charon, we would have seen more of the boat, we would have seen more of... This definitely feels foresty. It doesn't necessarily feel like we're on the edge of the sticks and here, you know. Like, that, for me, it doesn't quite... reach Charon level.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's definitely a possibility that maybe it's, what is it, Fields of Asphodel?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Like, one of the different parts right. of the underworld.
Like, this could be a shade yeah. or something.
Yeah, because, like, we know that they once they get down there, they kind of experience a few different parts of the underworld kind of quickly as they're trying to get to where they need to be. So, like, yeah, maybe it's one of those parts and it just is so striking they included it in the
yeah. trailer. Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. I mean, if it ends up being the Oracle, that's fine. Just not how I pictured her.
Same.
But I'm open to see how that plays out. We also get a shot of the common area with the fire pit. And I was wondering, do you think we'll see Hestia? I feel like that's one of those, like, references that they could very easily include in one of the opening shots.
Yeah. And, I mean, all it would be dressing up an extra... a little bit more, like, giving a little more detail to one extra yeah. versus others. Like, they wouldn't have to do anything. She wouldn't have to have lines or anything. But, yeah, I would love to see them include Hestia here just because of her significance later.
Yeah, that would be really awesome. This is also the first time we see Dionysus, which is pretty cool. I loved that so much. And he looks so tiny next to Chiron.
And he's a tall man, so it's just
yeah.
funny.
Yeah. And I also love that Percy's shirt is so much brighter than the others. And I'm like, wait, do the campers only get one shirt that they've washed, like, every day since they've been at camp?
I mean, maybe it's just, like, somehow magically clean the next day. Because yeah. I cannot imagine all these children are doing laundry every
right?
day.
The Harpies clean the cabins.
Yeah.
But do they do their laundry? And that's only at the end of the year, so...
Yeah. Like, I'm gonna say they each have probably, like, 5 shirts. But all of the other campers' 5 shirts are probably yeah. way dingier than yeah. Percy's brand new one.
I just, that small detail, you know, they didn't have to, like, make the shade of orange different. But it says so much in that little bit.
It really does.
There's just so much detail in all of this. Luke... then says, demigods process reality differently. We gotta figure out what you're good at. This is Luke's first line in the trailer. We get a lot of first lines in this trailer. A lot of hearing certain characters for the first time, which is really exciting. We see Annabeth disappear under her hat.
Got a little thrill.
Yeah.
Not gonna lie.
It looks fantastic.
It did.
It looked really good.
Yeah.
Luke hands Percy a bow, and he takes aim at a Hydra target. My question was... is this in reference to the movie?
You know, I did not put that together, but
like,
it very well
could be
because yeah.
they put the Hydra in the movie instead of doing, like, the Chimera and, you know, various other creatures.
Rick totally would have done this.
I know.
And if he didn't come up with it, if someone else did, and they were like, oh gosh, this is going to be hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, just wait. Because I kind of wondered why they picked, like, a Hydra. Like, as I was watching the trailer, I'm like, that's an interesting target. Like, you know, you could pick any creature. And
yeah.
they picked a tiny Hydra. Like, But now that you point that out, I hope that's what it was.
I know.
Like, I really hope so.
Yeah.
Because that's
I hope we get a confirmation of that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Percy almost takes out a bunch of demigods when he fires off his arrow, and he says, should I try again? And everyone yells, no! Again, with the comedy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, a little bit of comedy, but it shows that this show is going to be... you know, funny in addition to being as action-packed and intense as it is. And I'm really glad that they're not giving away too many of these moments.
Yeah.
Because I want people to know that the show is going to be funny and that it's going to be, like, upbeat in some of these areas. But also I want to save a lot of the jokes and the comedy. I want people to be surprised by how great that really is.
Agreed.
And I also wanted to point out, and this goes back to what I was saying before, there is a demigod in a wheelchair in this scene. And I saw her in the other shot too, I think, when they were around the campfire. There was somebody who looked like they were sitting down, but not sitting down on like one of the stone benches that were there. It looked like an actual chair. And I was like, I wonder if that's a wheelchair. And she's in a wheelchair in this scene. So again, with disability representation and everything. And I think that's really wonderful that they included a background character in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Percy then says, there's no place for me here, and Annabeth replies, you still don't get where you fit into all this. We see the Tunnel of Love light up, and I'm wondering, like, is this Aphrodite's power or something? Because it looked magical. It didn't look like lights. It looked like magic.
Agreed.
Annabeth then says, we were sent on a quest by the gods. What'd you think? It'd be easy?
Never.
Love Annabeth. Annabeth then stabs the chimera in front of Echidna, and we see Percy and Grover walking through the underworld. There's a mountain, basically, on the ceiling. It's like a giant stalactite, but it looks like a mountain. And we kind of talked last week about how the underworld is the inverse of Olympus, so that kind of makes sense. And you see that it's like a cavern. It doesn't have a sky or anything.
Yeah.
And there are two guards posted up on the other side, so we don't know... We know that Annabeth is in the underworld with them, but, like, we don't know why she's not with them right here. So, you know, anybody's guess as to what's going on at this moment. Or she could be invisible.
She could be, or she could be, like, just off, out of scene.
Yeah.
Like, she's, like, there, but just isn't in that shot for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Possible.
There's text on the screen that then says, unlock your destiny, unleash your power. I think that's really good. Strong language to have on here.
Oh, yeah.
We hear Hermes say, demigods, welcome. We hear Lin-Manuel Miranda say...
Yeah, Lin-Manuel Miranda as Hermes, because he comes across very Linny. Although, I will say, this felt more like Hermes to me. Like, this was what I missed from that still shot the other day, where I was like, that's Lin, that's not Hermes. In this moment, like, it's very Lin. I mean, it's two words. It's not a lot to go with. But, like, I still got, like, Hermes vibes. Like, you can definitely feel the difference between him playing Hermes and just him being Lin, so.
Yeah. I don't think I got those vibes, but that's okay. I'm, you know.
I may have also been projecting, because I really, really, really want everything to be perfect. And, who knows?
We'll see. We'll see how it plays out. So then we see Grover running across one of the, like, poker tables or whatever that is. And then we see Percy tackling an older satyr within the Lotus Hotel, which I don't know if I remember anything to do with this. I don't know why Percy would be tackling him.
Yeah.
But we know, you know, they didn't see Hermes at the Lotus Hotel in the book. So there could be a whole different thing going on here. So I'm very excited to figure out what that means. And you can also see how different the horns are compared to what Grover's little nubs. We also get a couple of shots of the Ares and Percy fight, which was really intense. I mean, Adam Copeland is not holding back as he swings that sword. I saw a lot of people going, oh, I thought this was going to look so bad, and that looks amazing. So I'm really glad how well that turned out.
Trust. Just trust.
Yeah. During the Minotaur scene, Percy says, Mom, I'm not leaving you. And Sally says, Perseus, hold fast. Brave the storm. Ugh. So good.
The chill.
Yeah. And again, like, just her tone of voice, the way she speaks to him, I love it so much. We see him running at the Minotaur with Riptide in hand. And we also get him saying, maybe I won't even need a sword. And then it, goes to part of the chimera and then back to him and goes, I'm going to need a sword. But we get the shot of the chimera and it breathes fire and it's very, very intense. But it looks fantastic.
Yeah.
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 Oh, so that is the full-length trailer for Percy Jackson and the Olympians. Just a reminder, it comes out on December 20th. It is a 2-episode premiere, which is really exciting. We will have a lot to dig into. We're going to be recording a lot that week, I think.
Yeah, and I'm not going to lie. I'm really excited. My family is taking our very first ever Disney trip over Christmas this year.
Yeah.
And I will literally be there 6 days after the first Percy episode airs.
Okay.
So I'm like, will they have some merch? Like, I know they won't have a lot because it's brand new. This is a brand new property for them. Like, they, you know, it's not like Star Wars where we're just waiting for the next new Star Wars movie and, you know, they already have millions of things. But I'm like, will there be, like, Riptide pens somewhere on property or, like, you know, a Percy pin or something? I'm really hoping there's something. Like, yeah. I don't need it to be a whole section or anything crazy, but, like, I'm hoping that they're really, truly prepared and that, like, there's something there for me.
Just because remember, though, you have to buy 2 of everything.
I will. I swear. Whatever I find, I promise. But, yeah, I'm very, very excited that it's going to premiere before I go. Not that I think they're going to redo the whole park for Percy, but it's just, like, I'll have that extra little something. And yeah. So that's
they might, I mean, for promo for the show, they might hand out, you know, bags or something like that. They did that at Halloween, so I would not be surprised.
So I'll be on the lookout for sure.
Yes, that'll be really exciting. And then we'll have to figure out when we record. We're going to have to record around your vacation. Yeah. So it's a very poor time.
I mean, we're only a month away.
Yeah.
We're seriously only about 4.5 weeks away from the premiere now. Like,
yeah.
It felt so long getting here, but we are finally so very close.
Yeah. Very exciting, but for now, we are going to shelve that and get back into our discussion of Chalice of the Gods, chapters 12 through 14.
Yes, all right, we're going to start with chapter 12, obviously, entitled Ganymede Gets Me a Refill. Percy's week is downright mortal until Ganymede visits him at school, complete with pitcher of standard Olympian beverage number 5. Then he and Annabeth iris message each other. Basically, they part after learning that they need to go to the farmer's market, which they have to wait for the farmer's market.
Right.
So they go their separate ways, which made me sad last episode, 2 episodes ago. And they go about their week. And Percy says he has a whole 3 days without any supernatural interference, which I thought was noteworthy because he's already started talking about how, like, they know as you get older as a demigod, there's less and less. Like, when you're young, you have a reprieve until a certain age, and then, like, there's a certain time span where you are nothing but caviar for monsters. Like you are the perfect delicacy and they're hunting you. Like, it just, I love that we're already seeing that time is having...
I can't get demigod caviar out of my head now.
You are welcome.
I imagine them slathering them on a piece of toast or something. Like,
right?
Scooping them onto a little bit of sushi.
And toast point. Like, here we go. Yeah. But yeah, so like, it's been 3 whole days and they haven't seen a monster, which is remarkable for Percy. And I really enjoy this for all of them, but especially for like Percy and Annabeth, who have not had any peace for so long. Mm-hmm. This just feels very welcome.
Yeah, and again, this is a slice of life party. And the fact that like, we kind of see him, like he kind of goes through what he's been doing and just seeing, like, this, these moments from his daily, normal, kind of the mortal side of his life is really interesting to me because we never get that in the other ones. It's always the day he gets kicked out of school, then he goes on this grand adventure.
His first day of school where he blows it up.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. So, like, getting these moments where he's like, yeah, I think I need to do some homework now. It just feels very normal. It kind of makes him feel more tangible, you know?
Yeah, and during these 3 days, they don't not see each other. I know that we know that these three especially are friends, but knowing that Annabeth, Percy, and Grover don't really go a day without seeing each other, they may be on opposite ends of the city, you know, for school or whatever, but they hang out at Central Park together, they get smoothies, they go to the movies. Like, I just, I love knowing that even when they're not questing or whatever, they're still very, very eager to spend time together. Yeah, it's one of those slice of life things that we were just talking about, and I love it. It makes me very happy. Percy, during these 3 days, Percy has a swim meet. He is impressive, but not too impressive.
I loved that detail.
Right? Like, of course I won, but, like, I didn't win by, like, 5 pool lengths like I probably could have. You know, it works for him. And then, of course, because nothing can be completely supernatural free when you're Percy Jackson, Ganymede shows up at Percy's school that Friday at lunch. And Percy only really notices because there's this gentleman who walks up with a pitcher and asks him if he wants a refill. And Percy's just kind of like, sure. But Ganymede is there. He fills everybody's drinks with precision. Percy's a little nervous at first because this is a god, and he's filling all of these mortals' cups with something. And Percy can see that the mist is at work because Ganymede is dressed in, like, kind of very older Grecian-looking clothing. Like, I think he says it's literally like a toga kind of esque thing. And so he kind of remarks on the mist and how well the mist hides these sorts of things from mortals. Just worth mentioning. But the liquid that Ganymede is using to fill everyone's goblets or glasses is blue and glowing, and it freaks Percy out because he's like, if that's nectar, all these people are about to die. And Ganymede informs him that this is standard Olympian beverage number 5. I didn't know that this was, like, a detail that was going to delight me so much. I love the idea that there are standard Olympian beverages and that each one has some sort of, like, Percy remarks that if this is number 5, I hate to know what happened to 1 through 4. Like, maybe they were experiments that failed kind of thing.
Right.
I just assumed that each one had, like, a specific property.
Right.
So Olympian beverage number 5 is the completely non-harmful to mortals version that you can fill anyone's cup with and it tastes what they want it to and it's fine. Like, it's just going to leave them feeling refreshed. I imagine that, like, 1 through 4 have other properties and other reasons. Like, maybe 1 poisons people and maybe number 2 is, like, specifically hydrating. Like, if you have been completely dehydrated or something. You know, like,
makes you stronger, makes you levitate, something.
Right. Yeah. So, like, standard number 5 is acceptable for all creatures and, you know, I love the idea of this and it made me very, very happy.
Now I gotta figure out how we can make something that looks like standard Olympian beverage number 5, because it's like blue and glowing, right?
Yeah.
So, like, you can make a blue drink and then figure out, like, a way to make it glow.
If we can get one of those cups that has, like, the light in the bottom.
Oh, so yeah.
We'll work on this.
That would be so fun.
But yes, standard Olympian beverage number 5 will leave the person, the drinker, refreshed, revived, and it'll taste like whatever they want. So Percy tells Ganymede that he does not believe that Hebe took the chalice. Ganymede's basically there for a progress check, and Percy lets him know, like, we saw Hebe, we had a whole thing, we don't think she took it. It just doesn't feel like that's what's going on. He goes on to talk about how Hebe is looking forward to watching Ganymede be embarrassed and probably zapped by Zeus at the next feast. So, like, she wouldn't have said that if she took it. Like, it wouldn't have had the same effect. And Ganymede reluctantly but does agree, like, yeah, that sounds like Hebe, that's definitely something she would do. So, moving on, Percy basically tells Ganymede, we have to go to the farmer's market, we're looking for Iris, that's our next step. And then Ganymede pieces out and just kind of fades away. Like, walks out, but just kind of fades away. After that, the next bit we get, Percy is at home, at, you know, basically getting ready for bed, in bed, ready for sleep. And he and Annabeth are talking via Iris message from across town. I love that it's them each with a flashlight and a humidifier, and they're, like, shining the light through the humidifier. So it's just, you know, I love it because Annabeth is not going to, like, they're both going to mortal schools, and Annabeth's not living with a parent or someone who knows who she is. She's living with a roommate.
Yeah.
And so she has to be careful how she contacts Percy and when she contacts Percy via Iris message. So I just love that it's like, oh, it's her humidifier and a flashlight, and this is just how we do things.
Yeah. I still want to know how they get the drachmas. Like, he has a bowl full of drachmas in front of him, and, like, did he have to earn those? Did his mom, like, exchange real money for that? Like, how does that work?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
We should ask Rick.
I know.
Where do drachmas come from? How do you get them?
How do you earn drachmas?
Like, is there a bank? Do you exchange money? Like, how do you do this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that is, That is, like, one of the glaringly unexplained things in the Percy Jackson universe is, where do drachmas come from?
Yeah.
It's a good question. As they're talking, Annabeth starts telling Percy about her plan for the farmer's market the following day. She thinks that a child of Iris should introduce them to Iris, to the goddess, again, in Percy's case, because he has met Iris, but Annabeth kind of reminds him, like, gods don't remember us, like, don't act like she should remember you, please. You know, she's, it's like, come on, remember your place, because gods do not give a crap, so make sure you're not expecting her to remember you. We know that there are no children of Iris currently at Camp Half-Blood. There are children of Iris that come to camp, but they're just not there year-round. So Percy's trying to figure out who she's going to reach out to, and Annabeth says that she knows of one in Soho, and Percy definitely, like, grimaces and kind of is like, really? So obviously he knows who this is, but I definitely did not know who this is, and I don't think it's someone we know well.
No.
Have we met this person?
I don't think so.
Because we meet them in the next chapter, right. So don't panic.
Yeah.
But, like, when they were introduced, I was like, did I forget?
Yeah.
But I don't think we have.
I went back to the wiki to see if there was any other information about her, and it was only from Chalice of the Gods, so okay. I don't think that she was in a previous book.
Good to know. But yes, we will get to that mystery in a minute. And yeah, I just had to kind of, like, imagine being Annabeth's roommate. Like, that, you know, you think about Annabeth as a person and, like, how she'd be as a roommate. And, like, she's probably very, like, tidy and whatever. But, yeah, there's got to be weird stuff. Like,
also Percy, very intense.
Yeah. And, like, Percy mentions her dagger. Like,
using it as a bookmark.
Like, I wonder how she feels having this dagger all around. Because Annabeth carries it. It's on her person all the time.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm sure she sets it down in the kitchen. She sets it down on the couch. She's, you know, like, how does this person feel seeing a dagger just float around the apartment all the time? Or, you know, like, or the dorm room or whatever they're staying.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things, like, interesting. It has to be fascinating being in the best roommate.
Yeah.
And that wraps up chapter 12. So we're going to do our favorite lines and favorite moments. Karen, what was your favorite line?
Mine was when Ganymede asked Percy, your plan? And Percy responds, talk to Iris, find your cup, don't get turned into rainbows.
Solid plan.
Yeah.
When approaching a god or goddess, yeah, not being turned into something inhuman is usually the goal.
Yeah.
For me, it was Ganymede during his interaction with Percy, and he says, forgive me, I so rarely send demigods on quests. Is this the part where I threaten your life if you fail? It's classic. That is classic Rick. Like, love it. It's chef's kiss. And then what was your favorite moment?
Annabeth telling Percy to do his homework and him answering with a, yes, ma'am.
It's so them.
I know, I love it.
Yeah, Ganymede assuring Percy that no one was about to explode is definitely mine. Like, Percy's, like, need to hear from him. Like, you're not giving them nectar, right? I loved the vibe of that whole scene.
Yeah.
Okay, and that takes us to chapter 13, and I throw it to Karen.
Yeah, chapter 13, we look for dead stuff at the farmer's market. The trio meets up with Blanche, daughter of Iris, so she can introduce them to her mom and at least try to lower their chances of getting incinerated.
Much appreciated.
So Grover is obsessed with Blanche. He thinks that she is an artiste. And I have to say, I am also obsessed with Blanche.
The minute I read the description, I was like, Karen is going to love Blanche.
Yes.
Like, we can write that down now.
Yes, Blanche is my kind of person. Blanche is a daughter of Iris who dresses all in black. She is a photographer, and she told this story around the campfire one night at camp about a kid who died and cursed everyone to lose their color when they walked over his gravesite, which was, dun-dun-dun, right where they were sitting. And then she drew, because this is her power, she drew all of the color from them and freaked everyone out. And Percy's like, there was crying and screaming, and that was just me. And I loved that so much. So Blanche seems like just a little bit of a trickster, but also completely her own person. And we'll see in a minute why her being all in black is so important. And Grover desperately wants her to take photos of him to give to Juniper. And he kind of keeps throwing himself in her line of vision, but all she wants to do is take pictures of dying things, which, again, I love so much.
It fits right in.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they do eventually find Iris at the farmer's market. She is a plump woman with long gray hair and a flowing purple and white muumuu decorated with iris flowers. And her eyes were multicolored like oil on water. I love that.
It's very pretty.
I mean, definitely not human looking.
No.
But maybe the mist covers that up. Like, they know it's Iris, so, like, they can probably see it. But, like, I love the idea of eyes like that.
Like, that's iridescent eyes.
Yeah.
The color so looks different. Yeah.
Yeah. Her booth is decorated all with crystals. And she's definitely, like, that person at the farmer's market. I was just at a reptile show last weekend, I think it was. And reptile shows, if you've never been to one, also feature lots of crystals and that kind of thing, because reptile guys and goth girls tend to go together pretty well, which is a testament to me and my boyfriend's relationship, because also accurate.
Reptile guy, yeah.
Yeah, and there were a lot of crystals and stuff there. They were pretty cool looking. I liked them, but yeah. So, you know, maybe one of them was Iris in disguise.
Possible.
It's very possible.
You never know.
Iris hates that Blanche only dresses in black and uses black and white film because she's the goddess of rainbows. She loves color, and here's her one kid who's all in black and doesn't even use color film in her camera. And we find out this might be a very ingenious strategy for her attention. Complete indifference kind of gets Iris desperate to impress her daughter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's genius. It's honestly genius. I don't necessarily think Blanche is putting it on. Like, I think that's just Blanche.
Yeah.
But it works impressively to keep Iris interested. Like, I'm sure, you know, we don't necessarily get a picture of the gods and all of their children all the time, but, like, I'm sure Iris has a handful of children, and she may not even know all their names, but she knows Blanche. Mm-hmm. Like, Blanche is solidified in there because she's so anti things that Iris is definitely all about. And so, yeah, it's definitely one way to make sure that your godly parent knows your name.
Yes. Blanche then calls in her favor with Iris. Her mom promised her a favor, and Blanche calls it in. She wants her mom to listen to Percy, Annabeth, and Grover, even though it'll sound like they're accusing her of theft. And Iris is like, wait a second. And Blanche is sort of like, don't, you know, blow them up. Don't turn them into anything. Just listen to them and do your best to just hear what they're trying to say. And then as for the favor that Annabeth now owes Blanche, Grover will pose for photos because apparently she's been trying to line him up forever and he's been playing hard to get. This part I didn't really understand because Grover has been throwing himself at her, but it must just be like she doesn't like read the room the same way other people do or something.
Yeah, but like she has been talking to Annabeth because she didn't know how to get in contact with Grover, and so she feels like he's being difficult, but really, like, they're just never in the same room or something. Yeah. Yeah, it does feel like Blanche maybe just doesn't know how to read what's going on.
Yeah. So, as for favorite lines, you definitely took my favorite one.
I mean,
it's so good.
It's classic. Percy says, maybe my entire career had been a series of Iris message butt dials.
Yeah.
It's classic. I love it.
This idea that the crystals are shooting off rainbows and this could maybe get quests, like, messages mixed up and quests going to the wrong people. So, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe he isn't meant to be the one who saves the world time and time again.
Maybe I didn't have to be and everything's been a giant accident.
It was just recent caller, Percy Jackson.
Sure.
Dial.
Redial. All right. Yeah. Let's send it back to him. Yeah.
Mine was in response to Percy hearing how Blanche is kind of getting her mom's attention, and he kind of says to himself, I wondered if that approach would work for me. If I moved to the Sahara Desert and feigned a hatred for water, would Poseidon start shipping me presents, fish tanks, swimming pools, brochures for ocean cruises?
It's good. It's
and then one. He's like, yeah, probably not. But I liked the idea of that.
I was going to say, if you hadn't already met and formed a relationship with your father, maybe that would work.
Yeah.
But you pretty much have it already handled, so I wouldn't worry too much.
What about favorite moments?
Mine was Blanche wheeling and dealing with her mom. The indifference thing is kind of genius, even though I do think Blanche is just being true to who she is. But I love that, like, because of this difference in relationship, she's able to ask her mom for favors. Iris is looking for Blanche's approval and looking for Blanche to kind of take on some more Iris-y mannerisms and things. So yeah, I just really loved the interaction between the two of them.
Yeah, for sure. My favorite moment was just Blanche in general. I just love her whole vibe. Yeah. I thought that it was a great introduction to her. The campfire story was really funny to me.
Oh, yeah. No, she is a whole vibe, that is for sure. Okay, so chapter 14 is entitled Iris Gives Me a Stick. Iris lets our trio know that she's got an idea who might have stolen the cup, but she needs her Carrikeon cleaned first in the River Ellison, which hasn't been seen in centuries. So that's going to be fun. Okay, so first of all, worth noting, Iris is a good listener. I just loved this fact because so many of the gods are so self-involved that they don't take the time to listen to what's actually going on or what's needed from them. And I loved that she was actually listening to them. Like, I don't think it was necessarily because Blanche told her not to zap them or whatever, but, like, it just feels right as a god of messages and, like, communication and all of that, that it works that she's very interested in what they have to say.
Yeah, she is a lot more reasonable than a lot of the other gods, and there's some stuff that she says later on that kind of just proves that.
Yeah. She goes on to talk about how she feels bad for Ganymede. She wouldn't want the cup. She didn't take the cup because being cupbearer is a thankless job. She wouldn't even want to steal the cup back to mess with Ganymede because the job is just... It's not something... It's worth pitying, basically. Like, she just feels bad for anybody who has to be at Zeus's beck and call in this sort of way. She feels badly for Ganymede, for him having to navigate Hera's scowls and the gossiping that goes on. You know, Ganymede didn't ask for this. We've talked about this before, how Zeus just kind of dragged Ganymede back to Olympus and, you know, made him immortal and didn't really give him a ton of options. Our trio are surprised to hear that she has sympathy for demigods who suffer at the hands of gods, just like Ganymede. Like, I liked hearing them kind of be surprised, because you're right. Like, this is new territory. The gods are never sympathetic for demigods who have been, you know, have suffered because of a god. They don't, you know, unless it's their child, they don't really pay much attention. So it's just kind of nice to have a god actually give them that back. The trio then ask Iris who she thinks resents Ganymede and who would stoop to stealing the chalice. She has an idea, but Iris wants to investigate it first. So this is a little bit of mystery, a little intrigue. Gotta love that. And when she's ready to share, the info will not be free. So now we're feeling like this is another general interaction with a god, because they always want something, and that just tracks. So she tells them that they have 15 days before Ganymede's predicament is going to be revealed. Zeus is planning to host his next feast in 15 days. It was only a matter of time before we got an end date here.
Yeah.
So 15 days is a good amount of time.
That's a big amount of time for a lot of what Percy usually has to
do. Usually it's a week, and that's all you get. So they do have 15 days. I think that's a good amount of time for them to get this done, but it does put a timer on the whole thing, and so now they really do have to be aware of how much time they're spending on this. Grover asks what the trio can do to help Iris to earn this information from her, and Iris tells them, she shows them her Carrikeon. It's a herald staff, kind of like Hermes. It's about the size of a broomstick with some fancy metalwork on the end. The top is celestial bronze, and the bottom is Dodonan oak. She wants them to clean it, but it can only be washed in the River Ellison. The River Ellison is described as being crystal clear magic water, and then at some point, certain creatures took advantage of the river and dirtied it and, like, polluted it beyond recognition, which you have to wonder, probably humans. Because, you know, it could have been other magical creatures, but I just assumed she basically meant mortals, but we'll see, I'm sure. The river is protected by horned serpents, whom they cannot harm. but will also be attacked by.
Yes.
Our favorite predicament.
I know. And these are the serpents that were on the front of the UK cover for this book.
Which it makes way more sense that they're rainbow.
Yeah.
Like, with all the rainbows in the... It makes so much more sense now. Worth noting, the horned serpents are not Iris's sacred animal, but they also must be protected. Uh-huh. So, yeah. There is only one major problem here. They have no idea where the River Ellison is. And so Annabeth suggests that Percy ask his Nereid guidance counselor for help. And that is where this chapter ends.
Yeah. Again, Grover comes in clutch with the information. Annabeth doesn't know anything about the River Ellison, but Grover does. And that just made me really happy. Like, he's so much more a part of this story than he has been in a while. And I love that.
And they have their strengths. You know, Annabeth has a lot of knowledge about the gods and architecture and the whole thing. And then Grover has his strengths. When it comes to nature and understanding all that, he really does know what he's talking about. So they really are kind of perfect sides of the same coin, like for Percy, as to have his friends. Like, they have a very complementary set of skills.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what was your favorite line?
My favorite line was when Percy was thinking, I had no idea what Dodonan oak was, but it didn't look very sanitary, and the headpiece looked more like celestial grunge than celestial bronze.
It's definitely a little dingy, needs a little cleaning, and so...
He's a little sassy, but also because the Arrow of Dodona, like, you know, the connection with that, like, very soon Percy will be more aware of what Dodonan oak is, and it's just this little, like, moment that I was like, oh, this just reminds me of what's coming up next.
Yeah. Mine was Percy when they were walking through the market. He says, as I walked through the market, I felt like a low-rep wizard.
That was also really good.
It just felt like, I kind of know this feeling from Comic-Con and things. Like, if you're dressed differently in a costume or whatever for any reason, and you'd walk through that crowd, like, sometimes you're just like, I feel, like, weird. Yeah. And so it just was fun to kind of have that feeling.
Also, shout out to the line that was like, there's cruelty-free soap, and, you know, there's nothing worse than showering with cruel soap. That one also made me really laugh.
Yeah, it was cute, for sure. Okay, and then what was your favorite moment?
My favorite moment was Iris not liking how the other gods, especially Zeus, feel like they can do whatever they want just because of who they are. This is a very different attitude to hear from a god, and for her to, like, specifically call out Zeus for this, and that's why she felt bad for Ganymede, because she was the one that was like, yeah, he was pretty and Zeus took him. Like, that's not fair to this guy.
Yeah.
It really feels like you can kind of trust Iris in this moment, at least.
Agreed, yeah. It was nice to see a god have a different reaction.
Some humanity.
Yeah, yeah. Just a little.
Yeah.
Mine was that our trio knew enough to ask Iris what she thought. They didn't really pester her with questions. They just kind of let her talk.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very smart and well handled by them. It helps that Iris is a very reasonable god to talk to, but, like, I just loved the interaction there and how they, like, made a point to just let her talk and keep her talking and use the questions that way.
And I also love that Annabeth was laying it on thick, and Iris knew it, but she didn't dislike it. She was like, yeah, keep it coming.
Like, and she called her out on it and was like, it's fine.
But, like, Annabeth knew how to make her feel good and kind of knew that would work. And, yeah, it was really clever.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at SubjectifyMedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts as well. Tune into Rewatchable for in-depth discussions of your favorite canceled and cult classic TV shows, such as Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy, Angel, and more. Not About the Weather is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with our favorite creators. And Not Another Teen Wolf podcast features interviews with the cast and creators and has discussed every episode of the show, as well as the movie, and Jeff Davis's new show, Wolfpack. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and we really appreciate it. You can leave us questions, comments, ideas for episodes or content you want to hear from us in any of these places. We do have some feedback this week from both the trailer and some just generally lovely things.
Yeah.
So I'm going to throw it to Karen for that.
Yeah, this made me happy. So at SPurdy2113, in reply to me thinking that the shoes were in that box that Percy was holding, he said maybe it could be the Minotaur horn, which I also think is a very real possibility. I still am leaning toward the shoes, but that was a guess that I hadn't thought of, so
yeah,
could be interesting.
It's, I mean, we agreed that it's definitely not Medusa's head. I think it could be the Minotaur horn, but also that, I don't know, is that box big enough to hold the Minotaurs?
Yeah, it just
like
depends.
They looked, you know, we've seen the Minotaur, but we haven't had, like, a really good look at him yet. So once the show is out, we'll have a better idea for sure. But
yeah,
I still think it's the shoes.
Yeah. Nicholas Haman at Haman Nicholas on Twitter said, I sadly fell behind on Prophecy Radio maybe 2 months ago, and I want to catch every episode I missed, but an episode celebrating the SAG-AFTRA strike success and happenings throughout seemed like a good place to quickly jump back in. I missed listening to two, not yet, middle-aged ladies talking Percy Jackson. There's so much inspired discussion.
Aww.
Thank you, Nicholas.
We appreciate that.
It's okay that you fell behind. I know that we pump out these episodes pretty regularly, and they are usually at least 90 minutes long, so I understand getting behind on stuff.
I mean, I get behind on things all the time.
Yeah.
As anyone who is a fan of our Instagram will probably recognize.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry that I'm terrible at my job, but I'm going to get it caught up again. Don't you worry. But yeah, no, we definitely understand. And thanks for listening. Thanks for coming back. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Also, Miss Bobalicious on Twitter said, I'm listening to you discuss the show and have a thought. What if Rick is one of Medusa's statues? That is such a good guess.
It's brilliant.
It's so good. And it could explain why Becky and him were, like, looking, like, frame by frame, and why maybe hers got cut off if she was, like, next to him and didn't make it in the shot or something. That, I would actually really love that. It'd be cool to see him in person, but I think it's really funny if he ended up being one of the statues.
I think it's brilliant. It gives you that blink and you'll miss it thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's all kind of funny because it's Medusa and the blinking.
Blink and you'll miss it! Oh my god.
Yeah, like, it's not a perfect thing, but it, like, totally fits in with Medusa and her whole vision looking at you stone thing. So, yeah, I think it totally fits. It gets him in the episode without him having to act at all, which
right.
I could see him feeling a lot of pressure about. But, like, if they were able to turn his likeness into a statue, it does two things in one shot.
Yeah.
And so I really, really think this is a possibility.
Ooh, this is a good possibility.
So keep a lookout when the first episode, second episode, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I don't know when we'll see him, but
When it airs and when we meet Medusa, keep an eye out because maybe that's where we'll see him.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Very exciting.
We may have already seen him by then. Who knows? We have no idea, but we'll be on the lookout for sure.
Bobby also says, I love your podcast and look forward to hearing you discuss every detail of every episode in the series. And if we're getting this intense about the trailers, I just have a feeling our discussions about the episodes are going to be
long.
Even more intense.
Yeah.
Long is the word I was looking for.
And it's so funny because we started the podcast with the intention of talking about the show. We were so excited and it's been so long, but like we're finally nearing that point. At the beginning of that point. Like, we're just getting started, and it's really, really exciting, because I really can't wait for the show, so thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thanks.
We appreciate you. Okay, so next week, we'll be talking about Chalice of the Gods, chapters 15 through 17, and until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio, signing off. Over and out.